Fast begins tomorrow morning. I believe the calendar says 6:08. But let's think a little bit in advance, because there's a lot to consider besides just not being able to eat. And I think having to be a Seder Teves, although people usually relegate it to the realm of a minor fast, in many ways it has a certain number of claims to fame and notoriety, unique to the specific day of Seder Teves that we don't find by the other fast days. Presumably, the reason why most people think of a Seder Teves as being different is because it's the shortest of all the fasts. But that often means that we don't have enough time to focus on its unique nature. What's interesting about Seder Teves Bizman HaZeh is the only fast day that can fall on a Friday. Every couple of years, we find ourselves fasting up until Shabbos when a Seder Teves falls out on a Friday. But there's really something else unique about it that does not occur with any other fast day, and that is, in theory, and obviously there was a period of time where this was relevant, but in theory, if it fell on Shabbos, the Avudrom writes, one of the Yisharim writes, that it would still be observed. We would still fast on Seder Teves, even though it occurs on Shabbos, which of course the only exception to fast on Shabbos, Yom Kippur, which itself is a Doraisa, the Torah requires us to fast on Shabbos when Yom Kippur coincides with Shabbos. There's a few other instances. If a person has a very disturbing dream on a Friday night, then the Gemara gives us license to fast on Shabbos as well. But for some reason, this category of fast, the only one at Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, we push off till Sunday. Shabbos B'Tavim, we push off till Sunday. And somehow, Seder B'Teves got that unique designation. So there's a classic explanation, which is attributed to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik and others who say a similar concept. The pasuk that teaches us about the different Taniyos Tzibur, as a pasuk in Zechariah, Tzom Ha... Tzom HaRavi, Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaShvi, Tzom HaHasiri, Yelav Es Yehuda L'Sosun L'Simcha. The four fast days, leaving Tainis Esther out, because it's not, strictly speaking, associated with the Churban. It's more connected to Purim than anything else. But the four fast days that are associated with the Churban, in the future, we know they're going to be celebrated as happy days, as celebratory days, and not as fast days. What's unique about Seder B'Teves, in addition to the Pasuk, that refers to them as Tzom HaAsiri, right? Tzom HaAsiri, the fast of that month, the fast of the fourth month, of the fifth month, of the seventh month, of the tenth month. There's another pasuk by Seder B'Teves that says Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh, Be'etzem on that very day. So most of the fast days in that category are only referred to as the month during which they fall out. Seder B'Teves is referred to additionally as the specific day, Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh. So the suggestion is that the other fast days, in theory, okay, we mark off the 17th of Tammuz because that's the day when the siege around Yerushalayim was broken. But in theory, if something happened and made it impossible for me to fast on the 17th of Tammuz and instead I fasted on the 18th of Tammuz, okay, but I still fulfilled this notion of the Tzom HaRavi. Thank you, okay? Tzom HaRavi. But Aser B'Teves, if you choose another day during that month, if you'd push it off till Sunday, you would not fulfill the concept of Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh that is related to us specifically when it comes to Seder B'Teves. So that's the reason why, again, according to that one opinion, it's not the prevailing opinion, but according to that one opinion, even if it falls out on Shabbos, you would fast. So the Chasam Sofer is bothered, but why is it that Tisha B'Av, the day when the most catastrophic of events occurred, the Beis HaMikdash was actually destroyed on that day? Why should a Seder B'Teves be more chomer, more strict than on a Seder B'Teves? So he explains as follows. He says, the Yerushalmi tells us that we know, number one, the siege around Yerushalayim began, Seder B'Teves. It was 2.5 years until the actual siege was broken, but it began on a Seder B'Teves. What happened on that day, not readily evident to the naked eye, but in Shemayim, as that siege formed, so there was a tribunal in Shemayim. The Bezin Shemayla sat down. Now the Mokom Sakana had emerged. Now the Jews were in the crosshairs, and that called upon the Beis in Shomayel to make a decision what in fact was going to result from this siege. Because there were other sieges, right? There was a siege around Yerushalayim in the time of Sancheriv, and there it didn't result in a fast day; it resulted in a celebration. 180,000 soldiers miraculously died overnight. This one did not end so happily, and that was because, unlike Sancheriv siege, the siege of Nebuchadnezzar was evaluated, was assessed by the Bezin Shomayel, and the decision was that Yerushalayim would unfortunately be destroyed. So what that tells us is, the Gemara, which we're familiar with, any generation during which the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt, it's as if the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in their day. That means, very literally, that every year there is another assessment by the Bezin Shomaila if it's time to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, if it's time to end the Golus. So if you're in that generation where we don't merit to have a decision in our favors, then it's as if the decision happens again in our generation to not have a Geula. When does that evaluation take place? I always thought it takes place on Tisha B'Av, right? That's when you'd imagine it. That's when we're sitting on the floor. That's when we're crying. That's when we're saying Kinnith. That's when we're reading Eichah. That's when we'd imagine they're making that judgment as to what. No. Chasam Sofer's Chiddush is that happens on a Asar B'Teves, just as it did in the original period of danger when they laid siege to Yerushalayim. So it really all comes down to tomorrow, not Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is when we try to recuperate. We try to retake our ground. But the decision, the psak, that the Beis HaMikdash is not going, and hopefully will be, but the decision is not going to be in our favor, that takes place on Asar B'Teves. So therefore, there is a unique significance to the day itself, whereas, you know, based on this line of thinking, Shavuos HaBetamos or Tisha B'Av is just the aftermath of that decision. But Asar B'Teves, when nothing actually happened, that's the way we think about it, right? All they did was they laid seat. No, in reality, this is what it all comes down to. The decision was really on Asar B'Teves. So with that in mind, it's important to just use the next 24 hours or so to try to change something about, right? When it comes to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we know we don't need to solve all of our problems and correct all of our midos and fix everything within that one period. But as we spoke about in Ne'ilah, if anyone still remembers Ne'ilah, so we spoke about just the proper trajectory, moving in the right direction, right? I have to repeat it, but it was such a great word, not my word, it's Rosh Hashanah Zalman. What's the difference between, right? What do we say? Why is it that the Mariv at the beginning of Tisha B'Av, so we're all on the level of Malachim. We're saying Shema, and we're saying Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Chol Mavod out loud like the Aron Shemayim when it comes on right at the beginning of Yom Kippur. Sorry, but in Ne'ilah, right, 2 minutes after Ne'ilah is over, V'hu Rachum Yechaper Avon V'lo Yashchis, right, we're saying it quietly. We're saying Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Chol Mavod quietly. We're no longer like Malachim. What happened? If anything, after 24 hours at that level, we should be more like Malachim than we were at the beginning after Kol Nidre. So he said it's all about the trajectory. As you're concluding the Tefillos on Yom Kippur, you may be on a very high level, but in the back of your head somewhere, there's a voice saying, "What's for dinner?" And as opposed to at the beginning of Yom Kippur, all right, we're buckling up, we're in it for the long haul, we're focusing our sights on what Yom Kippur is about. So the trajectory, let's just take 3 more minutes, trajectory for Asar B'Teves, to try to rectify the things that unfortunately did not get fixed that period 2,000 years ago, or a little more, when the decision was made that Yerushalayim should be destroyed. So, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, I want to thank Rabbi Chaim Weg, he's a member of the Kol in Chicago, who shared the following story. Beautiful story, I never heard it before. There was a young man who called him Shlomo Zalman and had a few questions about mezuzahs. He just got married, moved into a new apartment, and right by the yeshiva, and he had some questions about mezuzahs. So Shlomo Zalman said, you know, well, I'll answer your questions, but do you mind if I come in and see your apartment? So it was a little bit, the student was surprised. He said, okay, sure, Rebbe, come. So he came, and he gave him brachos, and said, okay, now I'd like a tour. I said, you want a tour? All right. He took him to this house, to this room. He said, oh, wow, what a beautiful room. You should have hatzlacha in this room. Oh, I took him to the bedroom. Wow, beautiful, beautiful bedroom. I'm happy you got everything. He said, oh, live. The student at this point was just flabbergasted. Like, what is the Rosh Hashiva doing? Every room, I need another bracha. So Shlomo Zalman said something. You know, you have to. Shlomo Zalman was a gon. He was a gon in every year of Tov. He's also a gon in Chesed. Always a gon in Chesed. He said, you told me your apartment is right down the block from Yeshiva. I've been in Rosh Hashiva for a long time. Guys get married. Some of them get apartments nearby. Some of them get apartments far away. If any of you have children, grandchildren, you have to get a hasa'ah from Ramat Beit Shemesh to Yerushalayim. Sometimes, it's, you know, you spend, yeah, it's a commute to get to Yeshiva. You know, it's all, but you're down the block. You're down the block. So, you know, there may be some of your colleagues, some of your classmates, you know, people in the kol with you, they're a little bit jealous. You know, you roll out of bed, you come to yeshiva, you're good. This one has to first take his children to Gan and then bring his wife to her job. And it's a whole asik to get to yeshiva in the morning. They hear you get married and you live right nearby, they're going to be a little bit jealous. Jealousy causes an ayin hara. Forget about red strings. What is an ayin hara? An ayin hara means when someone looks at you and sees that you have something that they don't, it can arouse in Shemayim a question of whether or not that person, you know, if you're a little bit jealous, they'll say, oh, maybe the Haka doesn't believe, that doesn't deserve, sorry, the blessings he was given. And that can lead a person to lose the blessing that they were given. That's really the concept of an ayin hara. So I wanted to go to every room in your house, give it a bracha, that you should not suffer from ayin hara by me lending the opposite of ayin hara, which is an ayin tova. Ayin Tova is to be overflowing, not with jealousy, but with a desire to see you succeed, to see you have more, to see you have further success in all of your endeavors, the opposite of an Ayin Hara. I want to counteract it because I'm concerned that maybe you'll be affected by that. Reminds me of a story of Chaim Kanievsky. Someone came to him and said, Rebbe, I just won the lottery, you know, and I'm afraid of Ayin Hara. Please give me a bracha. So he said, well, you won the lottery. Okay. How much? 5 million shekel. Okay. Have you learned more Torah as a result of your... No. Have you given more tzedakah since you won? No. So what exactly do you think anyone's going to be jealous about, you know? Okay. It was in B'nai Brak. So you don't have to worry about Ayin Hara. No one's jealous of you. Don't worry. So the message from Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach is that it's too easy to see other people's success, other people's happiness, and the knee-jerk reaction. We always have a reflex to to have that Ayin Hara, to, you know, just to not we'll just leave it at this, not share in the same simcha that the other person is enjoying. And an Ayin Tova that the Mishnah Perkei Avos says, Perek Beis Mishates, Ezu Derech Sheyivar Adam La'atzmo, Reb Elazar, the first one to speak says, should look to have an Ayin Tova. And the media you should stay away from is an Ayin Ra. We should always be looking to give more brachos, to appreciate, to be happy for the other person, and wish them success. And that's precisely the easiest thing a person can do. Whoever you see in the next 24 hours, look for their good qualities, look for room to share in their prosperity and hope and bless them for its continued continues, you know, for them to continue that that enjoyment, and not to do what again the reflex is to look at it in some sort of negative or discriminating way, but only the positive. Ayin Tova, that's what Shlomo Zalman Auerbach taught us. Maybe I there might be people who are rushing, so maybe afterwards we're happy to stay around.